Prominent political figures from both sides of the aisle have been accused of sexual misconduct in recent months. Revelations on the federal level have led to stories of harassment at state houses in Boston, Denver, Sacramento, and Tallahassee, among others. WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi spoke to more than three dozen lawmakers, lobbyists, staff, interns, and journalists who spent time in North Carolina's General Assembly. He uncovered details of at least two troubling past incidents and a culture some label as demeaning, while others say it's friendly and fraternity-like. A quick advisory that this story contains explicit language.
In July 2007, David Almond, a Republican House lawmaker from Stanley County, resigned abruptly. Rumors flew around the building, but leadership did not publicly go into detail about why, and it was all quickly forgotten. More than 10 years later, WUNC has learned that Almond was forced to resign after allegedly exposing himself to a legislative assistant and then masturbating on an office chair. Julia Howard, a fellow Republican lawmaker, was on the Legislative Ethics Committee at that time.
The chair we put away. There was semen on the chair.
Howard says the quick action was appropriate. There was no legislative investigation. No criminal charges were ever filed.
We put a fine line in the sand, and since that date, if there's been any allegations, we have addressed them. That's the end of your story.
Another member of the ethics panel corroborated that Almond was promptly forced out due to a, quote, serious sexual harassment complaint. Today, Almond sells life insurance in Stanley County, the area he represented while in the House.
Number one, I would deny any and all accusations. Secondly, no one has ever publicly accuse me of anything. And thirdly, the issues that did exist between a complainant and I have long since been resolved privately and on a friendly basis and non-financially. And that's really about all I have to say about it.
May I ask you, why did you resign if these allegations are not true?
I thought it was the best thing to do. And that's really all I have to say about this.
WUNC attempted to reach out to the legislative assistant who filed the complaint, but we were unable to locate her. Another notable incident of a different type took place even longer ago, in January 2003. A young lobbyist named Marisol Jimenez entered a meeting with House Representative Daniel McComas, a Republican from New Hanover County. It was her first week working at the General Assembly. According to Jimenez, the state lawmaker gave immediate attention to a tattoo on the back of her neck, exposed by a ponytail.
So he notices it, he remarks on it, and then he proceeds to take me by the ponytail and pull me around his office from legislative staffer's desk to legislative staffer's desk, saying, look what she has on her neck. Can you believe what she has on her neck?
Jimenez says the incident lasted 20 to 30 seconds. The account was corroborated by Jimenez's then-boss, Andrea Bazan, who was also at that meeting. Jimenez said she and her boss tried to laugh it off in the moment.
But he for sure was dragging me around his office by my ponytail.
Jimenez is sharing her story publicly for the first time. After the encounter, she didn't pursue the issue further, adding that even if she had wanted to file a complaint, it wasn't clear to her where or how to report such an incident. Daniel McComas served 9 terms in the House and retired from the legislature in 2012. He was then appointed by Democratic Governor Bev Perdue to be chairman of the North Carolina Ports Authority. He adamantly denies the incident took place, and he does not recall meeting Jimenez.
Man, if that happened, I think she should have called the police right then and there.
Do you dispute that it happened?
Well, I certainly don't remember. I dispute it, yes, sir. That's very much out of character.
McComas currently owns a shipping business in Wilmington. In February, Democratic Governor Roy Cooper appointed him to the State Board of Transportation. Jimenez says she never returned to Representative McComas' office. She also said that many of the lawmakers she dealt with were always professional. The hair-pulling incident was the worst she experienced, though she explained a pattern of uncomfortable interactions.
What I found was group of men who were sort of unashamed in flexing their power with me and crossing boundaries with me and putting me into situations that were hostile and at sometimes even threatening.
Hostile and threatening are not words used by the majority of the other lawmakers, lobbyists, and staffers interviewed for this story. More than a dozen current and former lobbyists said they avoid going into one-on-one closed-door meetings with certain lawmakers. At least two lobbying firms have a so-called informal buddy system where women are not allowed to meet privately in lawmakers' offices. One current lobbyist said firmly that this is not a Democrat or Republican thing, but rather a, quote, man thing. Jimenez agrees with that assessment.
No, it's not a partisan situation. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. I'll say that it was not a partisan situation.
Not every woman who has spent time in the General Assembly feels that the culture is problematic. Becky Gray was a legislative staffer and is now a lobbyist and vice president at the conservative John Locke Foundation. She has worked in the legislature for 20 years.
During the time that I worked at the legislature, I felt like I was respected 100% of the time.
Paul Coble oversees operations as the General Assembly's Legislative Services Officer. He says there have been no formal complaints of sexual harassment in the 2 years he has worked in the building. In an email, Coble said that, quote, due to the number of incidents reported in media recently, we are taking this issue very seriously. The legislature has an unlawful workplace harassment policy. It is a 7-page document from October 2006. Another procedure was established in March 2010. The Ethical Principle and Guideline 9 document is 2 pages. WUNC asked Rick Rosane, a professor at the City University of New York, SUNY School of Law, to review the policies. He specializes in employment and sexual harassment law and helped write the sexual harassment policies at the New York State Assembly.
So what jumped out at me is that it was rather short, not easy to read. I would consider it inadequate in terms of a basic policy concerning what they're trying to do is create and maintaining a respectful workplace, particularly as it relates to harassment issues.
Rosane recommends the General Assembly adopt an independent reporting procedure and an independent neutral investigator to find the facts of each complaint that is filed and make recommendations. Coble, the legislative services officer, did not comment on that analysis, but he has indicated that the legislature's HR department is in the process of reviewing a training program that could be introduced in early 2018. Harassment at the legislature in the last 2 decades has ranged from gross misconduct to widely accepted generational norms. As the nation grapples with each successive revelation, statehouses, along with newsrooms and movie sets, are among the workplaces navigating a difficult discussion and a new day in the American workplace. Jeff Tiberi, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.